And welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. As always, thanks for taking time out of your day to follow me. Coming up on second episode, we're going to be talking about Seacoast Science Center and what's going on with marine mammal rescue. It's important that we focus on these issues as we open up the beach. But I did want to talk a little bit about certainly what the top news story is or has been over these past 2 weeks. Of course, the death of George Floyd and what does that really mean? And a calmer conversation is important. And I think there are many of those happening, but also there's also conversations that are somewhat distracting from a better conversation that can be had. And of course, I'm pleased to be joined by this next individual. I'm going to read you a little bit of his pedigree so that you feel very comfortable why I asked him to come on. Of course, Eddie Edwards had a distinguished career in the U.S. Navy. That's about the only fault I can find in him, actually. But he's also the New Hampshire Bureau of Liquor Enforcement, headed that. He also was a former police chief. Some of the great accolades that he has received, career profile by the King Sentinel newspaper, appointed to the by the Attorney General to the Governor's Crime Commission, New Hampshire Legislative Study Commission on Street Gangs, 2012 Spirit of America Award, 2012 Patriot Citizen Award, 2013 Governor Maggie Hassan's Commendation, 2013 Outstanding Service in Field and Highway Safety, Chairman of the New Hampshire Disproportionate Minority Contact Committee, served as the New Hampshire Legislative Study on DWI, Governor Appointment of Federal Advisors on Juvenile Justice, 2008 Top 40 Leaders in New Hampshire under 40. Eddie, quite a career that you've had, and it's great to have you in to kind of talk about what we're discussing right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity.
One other thing I do want to be very clear about this conversation, too, is that Eddie and I have somewhat similar past, but much different paths as well. We both come from law enforcement. We're both veterans. Whenever we're in a crowd, those two things stand out with many people who talk to us. So it does give us an opportunity to talk about it from different angles. But Eddie also has a different life path than I have to the destination we're at right now. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. The first thing, Eddie, I want to talk with is that the video. So we watched over 8 minutes. I was appalled as a former police officer. I've never seen anything like that, and frankly, I was kind of distressed as a former law enforcement official about what I saw.
Yeah, I think we all were. Jeff, I think if you worn the uniform, you watched that execution of a citizen by law enforcement. It was heart-wrenching. It was disgusting, and it was just sad. It was just sad because you look at it with disbelief, because that's not consistent with the training. That's not consistent with the values, honor, and integrity that goes along with that uniform. And like we often talk about in law enforcement, that an action has a reflection on the entire law enforcement community.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to make sure that you're upholding your end of the bargain, contract, that social contract we have with communities, that contract you have with one another that says that we're going to operate in an honorable and with honor and integrity. And that was missing. And those four officers were not police officers. They were not representative of law enforcement. They committed a crime. And to watch a grown man cry out for his mother, it's just sad.
It is. You know, the absolute lack of empathy, not only as a police person, as a law enforcement official, but as just a human, was really the thing that caught me. I've never been in that situation as a police officer that that empathy left me completely, and I think that was another distressing element as well.
Yeah. It's that when you can watch someone's life leave their body, and you're on top of them.
Yeah.
And you hear them pleading for mercy, and you don't stop. That's a heartless person who shouldn't be anywhere near a uniform. And that's a cultural issue also within that police department.
Correct.
They were way too comfortable in doing that.
Right, I know.
I mean, it wasn't even second thought, second guessing. And by the way, and I'm not sure how many people are aware of this, but the Minneapolis Police Department, there were 44 cases, I believe, it's been reported over a 5-year period where they choked people to the point they passed out. And those people obviously recovered. But think about that, 44 people. in 5 years. Using a technique that most professional developed law enforcement agencies are not using, are not sanctioning.
Right. Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Eddie Edwards. We're going to talk a little bit about more techniques. I will say one thing, and I hope, and Eddie knows this as well. When you speak about New Hampshire, we have one of the finest training institutions in the world, period. It is a wonderful institution. There is room for improvement. But what we saw in Minneapolis, we have been able to avoid to some extent here in New Hampshire because of the outstanding training. Eddie has been one of those providers of that training. Eddie, you talk about this situation. And of course, this situation has been magnitude by other events as well. And you talk about the relationship we have as humans, as individuals, as law enforcement, whatever you want to define it, as kind of lanes. Talk a little bit about those lanes.
Well, there are a couple different lanes. And one of those lanes is being a law enforcement leader, being a law enforcement officer, having the experience of growing up in challenging situations, having the experience of training and leading other law enforcement officers. And when you look at the different lanes, the different buckets, and how that shapes a person's view, just being a black person, how that shapes a person's view in the law enforcement community. And, you know, one of the things I kind of point out to people is that where I grew up, in the time I grew up, you grew up in situations where there was a lot of drugs, a lot of violence in the home and outside the home. And I viewed law enforcement very differently in my life as opposed to my brothers and other people in my community. Mm-hmm. Because I saw them as someone who was helpful because they stopped pain in my life. So I saw that whole process very differently. And so when I look at this issue here, you know, I think we have to take time out, particularly in New Hampshire. We have to take time out, and because we can do things a little differently here. We can have those conversations. You and I have had conversations over the years about a variety of topics. I've had conversations with my neighbors, people at the grocery store. And that's where we begin to make real change because we begin to connect and have real relationships. And I think you can't underestimate the value of that. Trying to construct conversations, trying to force conversations has never worked. The thing that has worked is when we talked about common values, those values that are developed in the home, in the community, and there's a voluntary willingness to connect with someone who you disagree with, someone who you don't have a similar background with. Those things are important, and I think we've lost that.
Once again, we're talking to Eddie Edwards. So, Eddie, I did an article on you 5 years ago, and I called it up. It was actually my Flashback Friday, this past Friday. And one other thing about Eddie I do want to say, ladies and gentlemen, is this, is that Eddie and I are friends, and for a lot of great reasons. And, you know, many of you are my friends online and Facebook, that you're acquaintances. I have a strict code for who I like as friends. And one of those codes is, would I trust this individual with my son, my sole child that I have? And Eddie, I quickly identified very early on when we first met that is a person that I would trust my son, and my son adores him, by the way. And that being said, Eddie, we also, you and I have to have an honest conversation about there are police forces in this country and maybe even in the state, and there are policemen who are missing an opportunity here to understand exactly what's happening. And talk a little bit about training, technique. I don't want to blame all policemen. Overwhelmingly, most policemen are very honest. They were repulsed by what they saw. But there is a lot of things that need to change within police departments and some individual police officers, isn't there?
Oh, I'd say very much so. I'd say very much so. And again, I echo your thoughts that we have one of the best training academies in the country. And I don't say that because we're in New Hampshire and you and I were trained by that yeah. academy. I say that because that's the truth. We have a wonderful new director of police standards and training, John Skipper, mm-hmm. and I think we should look forward to wonderful things coming from him. But there are things that can happen at the training academy, but this goes back to the police department, and I think you will agree with this, that the chief and the top commanders in police departments set the tone.
Yep.
Because the men and women under your charge should know very clearly what's expected of them. The policies state very clearly what's expected. And there should be accountability in the system. And I think when I look at some of the things that have happened, even in our state, where there's some shortcomings, I think it's mostly around policy and follow-up and compliance with those policies. One of the things, I'm a big proponent of CLIA, which is the National Accreditation for Law Enforcement Standards.
Yes.
And the police department you work for was a national accredited agency.
Yep.
I established liquor enforcement as the first statewide nationally accredited law enforcement agency and the second liquor enforcement agency in the entire country to be nationally accredited.
Thank you.
And I think those things are so important because without policy, without supervision, and without those checks and balances that are done by executive leaders in law enforcement, you're going to have moments of breakdown. And I don't think you're ever going to see anything like we saw in Minnesota, ever in New Hampshire. But that doesn't mean that we don't have room for improvement. And I think we have to reexamine how we train folks. We have to make sure that there is proper funding for law enforcement training. You know, when people start reducing budgets or talking about budget cuts, training is the first area you cut from. And that's the most critical area to provide training for. You know, police departments have been accused of wanting toys, wanting regalia, because they want to advance and take advantage of the latest tools available to reduce harm and risk to the general public, to the police. And I think we have to, but that comes with being more transparent. Some police departments are very closed off. Some police departments very much believe in community involvement and engagement. I think those things are important. I think the community has to feel that you're building a level of trust.
Right.
This comes down to trust. And if people don't trust you, they won't believe you. And
trust can't be
developed in a moment of crisis. You know, that you have to develop that trust long before then.
So well said, Eddie. You know, and I've said that before, too. Once again, we're talking to Eddie Edwards, and you're right. I was blessed to have worked for the police department I worked for Dover. I was also blessed to have a great police chief who believed in accreditation. Folks, I cannot underscore the importance of accreditation. Charlie Reynolds was great. And I also can't, you know, people don't realize sometimes I was a police officer because I've been so far removed from it. But I was also blessed to have been a community police officer. I was blessed to be in a neighborhood and have that opportunity to meet and greet and be neighbors with people in non-crisis times. And you're right, Eddie, that is so important. Let's talk about training. A lot of people don't realize what it takes to become a police officer. Certainly, they've never been there. They've never rode along. They've never talked to their department. The technique, I'm going to stop calling it. It wasn't a technique. I don't even know the hell that was. You've trained officers before, one in de-escalation and one in when you have to use physical force. What I saw there was a lack of understanding of de-escalation and a complete lack of how vulnerable the human body is, whatever that was that they were trying to do.
Right. Right, and because use of force starts with verbal communication.
Yes.
And it starts with the officer's presence and verbal communication. How your body language is 60% of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So how you engage someone, how you trigger someone. And we're all aware of those officers who show up and make things worse when they show up on the scene.
Been there.
And we're all aware of those officers who can calm people down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that comes with the willingness to want to learn your community, engage in your community, and keep yourself safe, and keep the suspect safe, and keep innocent citizens safe. That all of those things a police officer has to have in mind. It is a difficult job to be a police officer. It's not for everyone. And becoming a police officer should be very rigorous. Going through the process of getting hired, the training, it has to be rigorous because you want to make sure that we're putting the very best woman or man on the streets to help. And if we can't do that, we're letting the community down. So I think when you go back and you look at the training, right, the it could take, in some police departments, the recruitment process, the hiring process could take anywhere from 6 months or more.
Yeah.
It depends on their level of vetting. And that's just one phase, the vetting phase. And then it's, can this person actually comprehend the information being taught to them, share it with them? Can they comprehend the training? Are they able to decipher what level of force is needed and what level and what situation? Not every situation requires the same level of force.
No.
Even if it's the same violation, it doesn't require the same level of force, depending upon the person you're dealing with. Some people may be compliant. You may be dealing with an elderly person. You may be dealing with a person who has any number of challenges, physical challenges. So, but that doesn't mean that you use that same level of 100% force when you're dealing with folks. And I think that's the most difficult part for people to understand sometimes. And it's also I go back to the checks and balances, because if you have robust policies, not only in your training program, but also in your monitoring of police officers, you know, one of the things that we did when I was at Liquor, we actually had what we call the early warning detection system for police officers.
Nice.
And so we monitored how often they called in sick. We monitored how often their reports were late. We monitored if they showed up to court or not. We monitored if they were deploying their taser or displaying their taser, and how often they were doing that in arrest situations. Did they ever draw their firearm? All those things, so that when you reached a certain point system and we watched that, we would have a conversation, even if there's not an incident that has occurred.
That's smart.
It gave us an opportunity to look and say, well, there may be something going on here that we're not aware of, because we don't want a high-risk situation in the community. And that's our job as law enforcement executives, to look at that. And so I think when police officers are being trained, again, you have to have the resources. You have to look at the emerging training techniques and what's the best practices out there. But that requires someone who is invested in that, right? It requires somebody who's invested in that. And it can't be once a year training.
No.
Right? So use of force, firearms training, sometimes some departments, that's once a year. Some departments, it's twice a year. But that's high risk, right? Low frequency, but it's high risk. And thank God it's low frequency. And what I mean by low frequency is that police officers aren't engaged in deadly force situations every time they're out. So it's high risk, but it's low frequency. And that's what you're training for, that high risk situation, because that's a moment of vulnerability for the officer, the community, and the suspect.
Oh, yeah. Once again, we're talking to Eddie Edwards. I love that check system that you put in place, Eddie. I think a lot of departments should think about that. A lot of departments need to get accredited. The reason why I like what you mentioned is, one, you can figure out those rogue officers by nature being rogue, and somehow that got missed in the hiring process. But it also points out that, you know, this is an extremely stressful job. What people fail to realize is that many police officers during their careers and after their careers will suffer from a form of PTS. And that creates risky behavior. That creates them wandering off the policy points and becoming dangerous not only to themselves but to their community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no question about it. And that's why mental health, providing mental health to police officers is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough thing, much like a veteran. It's a tough thing to ask for help. Tough thing, because you're used to providing help. You're used to being that person that goes in and runs towards the danger.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, policing is a very, very tough job. And there are so many different lanes involved. There's so many different directions. And it's a big demand. And you're moving with the wind in a community at times. And police officers are asked to be a lot of different things in their community. They're asked to be that counselor.
Yeah, I know.
They're asked to be that mentor. They're asked to be a person who provides security, a person who provides comfort. And many police officers welcome that, and they appreciate that. You know, police officers are your coaches in your community. Police officers are people who are volunteering on the weekend to help paint a building, help pick up trash. It's a great honor that you and I have had the privilege of serving in law enforcement.
Yeah.
That's an honor. That's a privilege. And it has a price. It pays a price on your mental health, on your physical health, and because there's a lot of demand. And so we have to honor police. We have to respect police. But we also have to know that we have to do a better job of identifying people who should not be
correct
in law enforcement. Maybe they're better people in a different profession. But when it comes to that requirement, that responsibility, because you have to get it right.
You do.
It's not something... you're not in a profession where you can afford to make a mistake, because we have the ultimate responsibility of protecting and taking. And unfortunately, sometimes that job requires you to take someone's life. That you can't get wrong.
You can't
make mistakes.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, we're talking to Eddie Edwards. We're actually coming to the end of our interview. One thing I do want to share with you, Eddie, I can remember what got me hired as a police officer. I was at the board, and you're right, I went through a long process coming out of the military. I didn't really originally want to be a police officer, but they asked me, one of the first questions they asked me, why do you want to be a police officer? I said, I don't. And they said, that's what got me hired. My understanding of what I was about to enter was quite interesting. Eddie, I'd like to have you back on again. Everybody listening to this interview with Eddie, I will post it back up as a podcast, so please go ahead and do that. But if you're a community and you want to have an open, well-balanced conversation, one that is calm and one understanding of many different facets of what we should be talking about, I encourage you to invite Eddie. If you want, just email me at nhperspective@gmail.com, and I will pass that request over to Eddie. So that he has an opportunity to chat with you and be part of it. But we need this balanced conversation. Even in New Hampshire, we need this balanced conversation. Eddie, thanks again. I hope you have a great day, and I hope we can get back together after this environment gets a little bit more safer.
Absolutely. Stay safe, Jeff. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll be right back on New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Okay.